Samuel chapter 18. We are going to look at 1 Samuel chapter 18 rather, verses 1 through 9. And it's very easy to caption what this is all about because in these 9 verses we have a discussion of David, or a narrative of David, his friend, and his foe. In fact, the whole section outlines on the basis of his friend and his foe. Therefore, this means that these verses are a bridge. 18:1-9 is a bridge. It's a transition. And it's a bridge and a transition concerning two things. From his dramatic victory, chapter 17, to his daily battles. And the dramatic victory, again, will be chapter 17. The daily battle will begin in 18 verse 10 through the end of the book, chapter 31 verse whatever that happens to be. And this basically is the dual theme. This dramatic victory bridges over, and the bridge between that dramatic victory which ended at the end of chapter 17 now transition section verses 1 through 9, and we begin with the daily battle down in chapter 19, verse 10, on through the rest of the book. Now, this, again, is broken down. The bridge is in two parts. And the bridge is made up of, number one, the love of Jonathan. The love of Jonathan is in chapter 18, verses 1 through 5. And then the second half of the bridge is about the jealousy of Saul. So the way the whole thing is put together is in chapter 18, in these first 9 verses, the writer says, I want you to focus on what everything else in the rest of the book is about. And we will be seeing through 20-some chapters, we will be seeing at point after point the strength of Jonathan's love as David's friend. And we will see the burning jealousy and envy of Saul. And these two things are summarized, then they're carried out in the rest of the book. And so with these two things, we can put details of each. Details follow. And they follow through the end of the book, chapter 31, when David now takes the throne. Now, for this first section, 8:1-5, and 18:6-9, notice the key words. Reading 18:1. Now it came about when he had finished speaking to Saul that the soul of Jonathan was knit to the soul of David, and Jonathan loved him as himself. And so in this section, the key verb is loved. Single key verb. Loved by Jonathan. In 18:6-9, the key word is found in verse 9. Samuel looked, and forget the rest of it, at David with suspicion. The key word is Dave and Saul looked. Loved by Jonathan and looked upon by Saul. Now, let's take that a little further. First, the love of Jonathan is a theme that not only picks up with him, but not only does Jonathan love him, all of Israel does. And the love that we're talking about right here in this section needs to be seen as two types. It was personal, but it was also political. And by that I mean, Jonathan loved him personally, as he would another person or another friend. But that's not the full picture of the love that was had for David in the Old Testament. The people also loved David politically, because he was a great leader, a great military man, and there was love from Jonathan to David, and there was love from the people to David. Let's catch that theme. First of all, we'll list the passages and look at them. This is not a full listing, but it is the one that we have in chapter 18. Look at 18:28 and 20 verse 17. And notice the emphasis is on personal love, or Jonathan to David love. Chapter 18, verse 28. David, one of the themes that comes in about David is how much this man was loved. You really don't have any, to my knowledge, any leader in Israel, any king, any prophet that was loved like David was. The people loved him. The army loved him. The servants of Saul loved him. Jonathan loved him. And notice we have noted in 18:28 that Saul's daughter loved him. When Saul saw and knew that the Lord was with David and that Michal, Saul's daughter, loved him. And that's not political, that's personal love between Michal and David. And simply note in your mind that the marriage of Michal and David is very prominent. What she did for him and he for her will be a theme throughout our coming studies. Michal and her husband David, or David and his wife Michal. Second, 2017. And notice the emphasis is on a personal love, or a person-to-person love. Chapter 20, verse 17. And Jonathan made David vow again because of his love for him, because he loved him as he loved his own life. And so we're talking about personal love directed by one person to another. Or we might put it this way. The love for David was person-to-person, both male and female. But second, there was a political love that was not as much person to person as it was people to leader. Number one is person to person. Number two is people to leader. Look, for example, at chapter 18, verse 16. 18:16. All Israel and Judah loved David. And so notice this is not the kind of personal love from Jonathan to David, or the kind of personal love from Michal to David. This was the whole nation and how they felt about their leader. Noticing also verse 22. Then Saul commanded his servants, speak to David secretly, saying, behold, the king delights in you, and all his servants love you. Now therefore become the king's son-in-law. And again, it's a political type of love of people to their leader. 18:16 then, and 18:22. And let's put with the word loved. David was probably the most loved leader in all of Israel. You have leaders for whom The emphasis is on great respect. But David was simply loved by that nation and loved dearly for everything he did for them. And basically that love was motivated by he went to battle for them. He was a man of war, and the people loved their military king and their leader that went to battle for them. So going back then to chapter 18. And we said there are two words here. One is the love of Jonathan, and second is the word looked. Now what you need to do with the word looked, coming down to verse 9, where we're talking about the jealousy of Saul. Now, with your text, here's what you need to do. Verse 9. And Saul looked at David, or looked upon David from that day on. You say, well, what about the word suspicion? They're not there in the first place. And in the second place, I think that our New American Standard Version has missed what ought to be there. Now, you obviously have to supply that he looked upon David. And that's the raw text, the bare bones text. What kind of look? What kind of look? NASB has supplied suspicious look. Or literally, they would have it, suspicious eye. He looked with suspicious eye. Now, if this verse is saying that he constantly looked upon David, and you ask what kind of look, where would you go for your answer? Would you go to context? And let me ask you this. Reading verses 6, 7, 8, was the look born of suspicion, or was it born of jealousy? A look of suspicion or a look of jealousy? Verse 6, it happened as they were coming, when David returned from killing the Philistine, that the women came out of all the cities of Israel, singing and dancing to meet King Saul, with tambourines, with joy, with musical instruments. And the woman sang as they played and said, Saul has slain his thousands and David his 10,000s. Then Saul became very angry, for this saying displeased him, and he said, they've ascribed to David 10,000s, but to me they have ascribed thousands. Now what more can they do? But can he have but the kingdom? Question, does this describe a look of suspicion, or does it describe a look of jealousy? I think suspicion is really off base. This was a look of jealousy. Do we have any NIV users here? All right, big and loud, read NIV.
And from that time on, Saul kept a jealous eye.
Jealous eye. And NIV's caught that, yes. Oh, sure. Sure. But what I think they've done is they've translated suspicion, which is a connotation, when jealousy is really closer to the whole type thing. If you're going to give the NAV, what was it, jealous eye?
Yes.
Jealous eye.
Kept a jealous eye on David.
Kept a jealous eye on David. And I think it's correct to say, well, if it was a jealous eye, is jealousy suspicious? And I think we can fairly say that jealousy is also suspicious. All right, now let's go down to the details of the text, exposition, the love of Jonathan. Love of Jonathan. Chapter 18, 1 through 5. Now notice in these five verses the way the text runs. Once you see it, it's very simple. It goes, Jonathan, Saul, Jonathan, Saul. Two cycles. First cycle, Jonathan, verse 1. Then what's verse 2? And Saul took. So Jonathan, verse 1, Saul, verse 2. First cycle. Where does verse 3 begin? Then Jonathan made a covenant, verse 4, and Jonathan stripped himself. So David, verse 5, went out wherever Saul sent him. You see the two cycles? The first cycle, verses 1 and 2, Jonathan to Saul. Second cycle, verses 3 through 5, Jonathan 3 and 4, and Saul, verse 5. So that seems to be the way it is put together. So let's begin with first statement. And the first statement is about the Jonathan-Saul relationship, and it's found in verses 1 and 2. First statement is about the Jonathan-Saul relationship, verse 1 and 2. Now, in verse 1, which deals with, first of all, Jonathan, 18:1, and then Saul, verse 2, and that will complete the first cycle. Note three words in verse 1. It came about when he had finished speaking to Saul that the soul of Jonathan was knit to the soul of David, and Jonathan loved. So the three words that we want to look at are soul, knit, and loved. Soul, knit, and loved. And I think what each one of them does, by the way, you know, in almost all, I haven't examined almost all, but in a large number of the languages of the world, Hebrew, Greek, and so forth, soul relationship is used to define friendship. The soul is the heart of friendship in most languages. It is the heart of friendship in most languages of the world. It certainly is in Hebrew, and it certainly is in Greek. And the emphasis is on innerness. I'll just put an arrow. The stress is on the innerness of friendship. And if we want to get an illustration of that soul relationship, keep your finger or pen here and go to Genesis chapter 44 for that word. Genesis 44. Now remember, Jacob had 12 sons, and the first one he had thought he had lost. He thought when the bloody garments came back that his son Joseph had been killed, so he'd written him off. And I think it's fair to say, with the youngest one written off as gone, you're going to have a little tighter grip on the rest. So all of his brothers go down, remember, into Egypt. They bring back grain, but the youngest son's name was Benjamin. And Joseph put, remember, the cup, his own cup in Benjamin's sack, and then sends people after him to, quote-unquote, discover it. They discover it. And so Joseph says, you're not going anywhere unless you leave Benjamin here. And the news is brought to Jacob, and Jacob says, no way. I cannot bear the loss of Benjamin. No way. And the reason I can't is my soul is knit to this young man. Look down at chapter 44 and verse 30. Now therefore, when I come to your servant my father, and the lad is not with us, since his life, soul, since his soul is bound up in this lad's life. His Benjamin is his everything. How do they express it? That close, inner, deep relationship. It's innerness and depth. And the noteworthy thing about Jacob is the way his soul is literally wrapped up in this young man. Benjamin is literally his everything. So inner relationship and depth is involved in that word. Going back to 1 Samuel 18, was knit emphasizes the oneness of the friendship. Now there is an interesting thing about the word knit, is it's a niphal stem in Hebrew, which means it carries a passive voice idea. This was not something that Jonathan did. This is something that happened to him. And so the idea is he met him on a soul level and something happened. They became one. Or they were knitted together in this relationship. And I would think that would also, the idea of oneness, point to spontaneity. Have you ever had a friendship that you had to sweat and work on? Wasn't worth it, was it? Because things that often have to be worked out and take such great effort, you wonder, were they really there in the first place? And therefore, the word knit is something that happened to Jonathan. Not something he concocted. Not something he worked out. Not something that he and David developed as a two-person team. It just happened. And there was a bond that was there that was natural and normal because their souls had met. The third idea is, and I looked it up, there is no such word, but I want to make it one. So, for memory's sake, the innerness, the oneness, the personalness. The personalness. And I would rather use a wrong word and get the advantage of the ness for memory's sake. Notice what makes it personal. What two words make it personal? As himself. Now let me give you something. And I'll read through and give you the Hebrew word. And you'll see some light, I think. It came about when he had finished speaking to Saul that the nephesh, that's the Hebrew word for soul, the nephesh of Jonathan was knit to the nephesh of David, and Jonathan loved him as his nephesh. The word translated himself is the same Hebrew word as is translated soul. So the idea of the personalness is their souls met, and he loved him like he loved his own soul. See the idea of personal thing here? It was like his own soul. And that is missed because our translation gives us the word himself in translating the Hebrew word nephesh. But you should see that the soul, three times, is the heart of chapter 18, verse 1. Now, one other thing we have not explained in verse 1, and we ought to look at. What are these opening words? Just a lead-in? Just a transition? Now, it came about when he had finished speaking to Saul that the soul of David was knit to the soul of Jonathan was knit to the soul of David. So notice there is a link. And the link of Jonathan's love and the initiation, the link or the initiation of his love for David was not when he met David. It's when he stood in the court and he heard David speaking to Saul. And somehow, somewhere, in the midst of Saul and David having a conversation, Jonathan is standing over here in the wings. And he listens. And when he listens, something internally happens. He listens to what David and Saul say, and suddenly finds an inner identity. Now, what would that be? And that is certainly the link of chapter 18. At the end of the communication with Saul, without David or Jonathan having said a word, what Jonathan saw and heard made him love David. So the link or the initiation is what he saw and what he heard. And that will be chapter 17, coming down to verse 55 through 58. As he stood there and he listened to David, can someone paint out the scene for us? What did he see? Saw something very unusual. Because what did David, as he talked with Saul, did he see football player-like having his helmet tucked under his arm? And he holds the helmet there like this. And as David looked at that, he was very impressed. Because what David held in his arms as he talked was the head of Goliath. And that would grab you, wouldn't it? Not. So coming into verse 55, when Saul saw David going out against the Philistine, he said to Abner, the commander of the army, "Abner, whose son is this young man?" And Abner says, "By your life, O king, I do not know." And the king said, "You inquire whose son the youth is." So when David returned from killing the Philistine, Abner took him and brought him before Saul with the Philistine's head in his hand. And as he carries on conversation with him, I take it the thing that impressed Jonathan so greatly was the idea that he was bound to David because he was impressed with his faith in the Lord. He was impressed with his faith that he had just exhibited in the Lord. And as he was impressed with the victory, impressed with the attitude of David, something clicked on the inside of him, and their souls were knit from that day forward. That carries, I think, a very, very important lesson. How can a friendship go wrong that is born in spiritual principle? How could it go wrong if born in spiritual principle? This one was, and it lasted, and it lasted, and it lasted. We've had then the first statement, Jonathan and Saul. We've looked at Jonathan. Now in that first statement, let's look at Saul, verse 2. Saul, verse 2. Now I think, verse 2, if you would ask yourself, after this victory, what did David want to do? Don't you think this verse implies that he wanted to go home? He didn't say, "Oh, I love it here in the king's court, I want to stay." In verse 2, Saul took him that day and did not allow him or let him return to his father's house. And I think that implies that that's what David was going to do. And so Saul says, "I'm going to take David and I am going to keep him here." I think these words are really a virtual order to David of you cannot leave. Now, why would that fact get stuck in between this and verse 3? Doesn't it seem like verse 2 ought to follow verse 3? Let's try that and see if it doesn't make better sense. And then we'll amend the text.
Now it came about when he had finished speaking to Saul that the soul of Jonathan was into the soul of David, and Jonathan loved him as himself. Then Jonathan made a covenant with David because he loved him as himself, and Saul took him that day. Doesn't that make better sense? Why has he split the remarks about Jonathan and David? Why does he split it with verse 3? Now I'll only give a conjecture on that. I think it probably is inserted at that particular point simply to show that he stayed in the court of the king as a result of his friendship. They were friends, and because of that, perhaps Saul did not have that much enthusiasm. But anyway, if my oldest son, my son, loves David, then let's please him and keep David here. Saul must have been one of the most frustrated men that ever lived. He was so jealous of David that he couldn't see straight. And his daughter loved him and married him. And his son loved him to the point of willingness to give his life. And of course, this made a very, very miserable man, perhaps one of the most miserable of all the Old Testament. Yes? Yes. He made it a habit of collecting them. Yeah. Yeah. Certainly to Saul's advantage to keep him. There's no question about that. Yeah. And he did have that policy. Okay, now let us notice the Jonathan-David relationship. Second statement, verse 3. Then Jonathan made an agreement with David because he loved him as himself. Now, we've got several things coming down here. First of all, in verse 3, the covenant. And the covenant was an agreement. And it was usually an agreement to do something. It was an agreement, usually mutual. Usually followed by a sign or accompanied by some kind of symbol. And the purpose of the sign was to proclaim the relationship and to remind of the relationship. For example, God made a covenant with Israel. What was in that covenant or agreement made with the nation of Israel? What was the sign of the covenant? The sign of the covenant, remember, was circumcision. What did that do? It proclaimed, I'm a Jew. And it reminded, I'm a Jew. And therefore a son of the covenant in special relationship to God. Now, why in this relationship then with these two, why did they need a covenant between them? Why needed? Why was it needed? And I think there are two reasons. Number one, as we've already implied, to publicize. We are friends and I want the world to know. What is the intent of a covenant symbolized by an engagement ring? What do you have an engagement ring for? To publicize. To let the world know that you are taken. But does it also remind? To remind of who you are. Publicize to whom you belong. Remind yourself of to whom you belong. And I think there's one other thing in here. Up till this point, is there anything in the text before verse 3 that says the relationship of Jonathan and David was mutual? Do we know Jonathan loved David? Do we know David loved Jonathan? Well, the first one we can prove that Jonathan loved David, but notice there's no real proof that David loved Jonathan. And so, verse 3, the covenant is between them both, and this is to show the love was mutual. And so with this covenant, David would be saying, and Jonathan would be saying, this relationship between us two that is so close, such a friendship, is a mutual relationship. That is the covenant. Oh, by the way, I forgot to mention back here when it talked about in verse 1, Jonathan loved David as himself. Note the passage that fulfills. Leviticus 19:18. It's a virtual, literal fulfillment of the command found in this verse. Chapter 19, verse 18, you shall not take vengeance, nor bear any grudge against the sons of your people, but you shall love your neighbor as yourself. I am the Lord. And notice, therefore, we have the command in Leviticus, and we have the example in the life of David. So we're having an exemplification. What do you mean, love your neighbor as yourself? Well, these men will live out what it means to live. So I would put it this way. The life of Jonathan and David together is the living illustration of thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. We're going to see it in shoe leather, and we could put it in Leviticus 19:18. You have it in command, and now in 1 Samuel, we're going to see it in shoe leather, in real operation between these two men. All right, the covenant then is the theme of verse 3. Now look at verse 4. Verse 4 contains a confirmation. Now, let your mind work a little bit through history. What king, rightful king, have you ever read about that looked at one inferior and younger than he and said, "Sir, my kingship is yours"? Can you imagine a politician saying, "You shouldn't vote for him"? I mean, you should vote for him. He has more character than I do. He has more valor than I do. You hear any of those words in the campaign? Vote for the other guy. He's better than I am. Well, that's exactly what Jonathan is going to confirm, that I'm heir to the throne. This man deserves it more. That's a pretty pure love, isn't it? Okay, let's look at that now in verse 4. Now, first of all, remember, Jonathan was the successor. So Jonathan had the right, or had the rights of succession. The throne was his. He didn't have to grasp for it. He didn't have to fight for it. It was his, and it was his by right. Second, notice there are two acts in verse 3. Jonathan stripped himself of the robe that was on himself and gave it to David. So notice the first thing on which to focus is on the robe. And notice along with the robe. See, the robe is primary. Along with the robe was his armor, including his sword and his bow and his belt. So we really have two classes of things. And the first thing to note, that this is the robe of kingship. It's the robe of royalty. He literally turns over his kingship to him. In the East, and this is hard for us to grasp, but in the East, in those times, to give another person your robe was the highest honor you could ever bestow upon them. Keep your finger here. Let me give you an example of it. Esther chapter 6. Esther 6. Samuel, Kings, Chronicles, Ezra, Nehemiah, Esther. Chapter 6. Oh, down to the, verse 6. Haman came in, and the king said to him, "What is to be done for the man to whom the Lord, whom the king desires to honor?" And Haman is an egotist, and he's sure it's himself. So he goes ahead and says, "Well, bestow him on the highest honor you can bestow on him." So Haman came in, and the king said to him, verse 6, "What is to be done for the man whom the king desires to honor?" And Haman said to himself, "Whom would the king desire to honor more than me?" Then Haman said to the king, "For the man whom the Lord or the king desires to honor, let them bring a kingly robe, which the king has worn, and the horse on which the king has ridden, and on whose head a royal crown has been placed. Let the robe and the horse be handed over to any one of the king's most noble princes," and so forth. So what is the highest honor in the land? King's robe. What then is Samuel doing, Jonathan doing then, in chapter 18? He gives him his robe. And second, he gives him the armor of a warrior. His robe and the armor of warriors. So he is going to be the warrior king of Israel. And you could say of him, like no other man, David was the warrior king of the nation of Israel. Now, one of the things we've got to keep in mind, and I think we mentioned it previously, but we need to say it again. Much of the teaching of 1 Samuel is by contrast. Remember when we took time to contrast Saul and David? Well, here's another interesting thing in contrast. The contrast here, coming down to verse 3, is that Jonathan was obviously a military officer. In giving his... And who would be more jealous of a military victory? The common person or a military officer if he didn't win it? I mean, Jonathan's got every reason to say, "I'm a military officer, and I don't like you getting credit for what I, a military officer, ought to get." But isn't it interesting? This man is as devoid of jealousy as Saul is full of it. Saul, intensely jealous. Here is a man who says, "You're more of a soldier than I am. You're more of a king than I am, so here's my robe. The throne is yours. You have the right to it. And here is my armor, everything I would go to battle with. You're a better soldier than I am." And that is part of the great character of this particular man. Finally, we've got covenant, confirmation of his kingship, and now finally, the commission of Saul. In 18:5, and one word here, we need to note its use because it's a technical term, though it is not in English. Chapter 18 and verse 5. "So David went out." That expression is never used of general business. It is used of warfare. "So David went out to war, to fight, wherever Saul sent him, and prospered. And Saul set him over the men of war, and it was pleasing in the sight of all the people, and also in the sight of Saul's servants." Now let me ask, can you see in verse 5, verse 6 makes it very clear, but can you see in verse 5 the little germ, the little seed of jealousy? In verse 5, who was pleased with David? All the people. All of Saul's servants. What about Saul? Doesn't say a thing, does it? And sometimes the silence gets really loud. And in the next verse, the signs will get very specific, because we will find out that in verse 6, this breaks into full-fledged jealousy. But and it's an interesting lesson about jealousy. What is the first bloom of jealousy? Withholding praise where praise is due. Everybody has accolades for so-and-so, and you sit there. I won't say a word. Jealousy's born. Because jealousy never gives praise where praise is due. Now let's look at this section, and we'll close out with some observations. And perhaps one other thing. Observations. A very important principle. Faithfulness was David's job. Promotion was God's job. Faithfulness was David's job. Promotion was God's. How did he get promoted in verse 5? How did he get set over the men of war? Did he apply for the position? Did he ask for it? All you can say is what Saul did in verse 5 was under the sovereignty of God. Is it a principle that faithfulness is our job and promotion never comes from anywhere except God? Keep your finger here. Psalm 75 teaches that very clearly. Psalm 75, verse 6. By the way, just a little parenthesis. During the last campaign, the pastor friend up in, up north, but had been pastor with Dan Quayle. And during the election, he called me one night, this pastor, and he said, I just talked to Quayle on the phone, and he said, Dan, I just want to read you a passage. And it was Psalm 76 and verses 6 and 7. Is that right? Yeah. For not from the east, nor from the west, nor from the desert comes promotion or exaltation. But God is the judge. He puts down one and exalts the other. And what is he saying? What a relaxing thing. We don't have to promote ourselves. All we have to do is be faithful. David was faithful. He believed the Lord. He accomplished what his will was, and God gave him a promotion. And very, very, very vital, whether it's in Christian work or whether it's in personal life, promotion is from God, and we should always, always remember that. It would be nice to have all of the money that is used in promoting Christian work to do Christian work. Ever stopped about that? If all the money that were put into promoting Christian work really did Christian work, what tremendous things will be. But we're much tied to the world system, and the world system says, you better market yourself, promote yourself, or it'll never happen. And so this is the first important lesson. Second observation. The success of another should be an occasion of rejoicing, not jealousy. Now that's easy to say, but that's tough, isn't it? Especially when you're in the same profession. He rejoiced in the uplifting of David over himself. The success of another is an occasion of rejoicing, not of jealousy. Now, this third one may sound a little obscure at first, but it's a characteristic of jealousy. Jealousy always creates goblins. Jealousy always sees someone in the closet, under the bed, or always sees these things out there as a threat. And notice that it became the pervasive theme of the life of Saul, because notice in verse 9, you can blanket the rest of the life of this man that Saul looked at David with suspicion from that day on. He hounded, he looked at everything that David did, and he was miserable. I'm sure he had nightmares. I'm sure he saw another Goliath come up, and David slew him, and Saul awakened in a cold sweat at night. He says, oh, God, it's not real, is it? But he was plagued with all of these things, and they were born of jealousy. Jealousy eats people alive. Now, one other thing. In verse 1, it talks about how he was knit to David and loved Jonathan like he loved himself. Principle. To love good people is to show your own goodness. Can you tell anything about the character of a person by who they love? By who they admire? By who their heroes are? The good heart of Jonathan was revealed in his heart in the attitude toward David. From just what we know of the New Testament. True love is expressed in words, correct? Or true love is expressed in action. And notice in verse 18, verse 1, we're told that he loved him. In verse 8, we have we have the action that proved it. Now, we'll pick up next time. Jonathan loved David and gave him his best. We'll have next time focus on verses 6 through 9, the jealousy of Saul. And we will find out how the jealousy will eat him alive until he falls on his sword as a suicide in chapter 31. Father, we're thankful tonight for your word. We're thankful that these are not merely biblical stories, but they're given for our edification, for our growth, for our development. And as we see these two very real men revealed in total honesty, their highs and their lows, may we recognize they are here for our teaching and for our instruction, and therefore may we learn from them in Christ's name. Amen.